And welcome back. Time again for Midday on the Bay, our monthly show produced in partnership with the Chesapeake Bay Journal. Rona Cabell is here. Hello, Rona. Nice to see you again.
You too.
Rona Cabell joins us once a month for Midday on the Bay. Today, a continuation of a conversation we had the other day with Richard Louv, the man who introduced the phrase nature deficit disorder. I thought we would continue that conversation today with some specific ideas about how you can do something to combat your nature deficit disorder. Places to go hiking, biking, kayaking, camping, spring peeping. We'll tell you what spring peeping is in a minute. It's not what it sounds like. Anyway, Rona is back with us from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And the laughter you hear in the studio coming from Candy Thompson, my longtime colleague from the Baltimore Sun, who finished there as outdoors columnist a while ago and is now a communications officer for the Department of Natural Resources. Hello, outdoors girl. Nice to see you again.
Dude.
Nice to see you. Nice to see you, Candy. That's what she always says to me.
Dude.
Nature girl. She's here. Thank you for being with us, Candy. And congratulations on your new job with the Department of Natural Resources. And Brooks Patinot is back. He's the executive director of Irvine Nature Center. I can still say new director because it's been about a year, right, Brooks?
A little less than a year, Dan.
A little less than a year. And he runs Irvine, and he's back with us today. But it's nice to have you all with us. Are you suffering a little cabin fever? What would you say about that? I really feel it. How are you feeling these days, Rona?
I feel it. I feel it definitely, and I can't wait to go outside.
Yeah, and do what? What's the first thing you're going to do when you can do it?
Well, I like to ride my bicycle around my neighborhood. I love to go to Cromwell Valley. I was there the other day. I am totally happy to go to Oregon Ridge, the NCR Trail, to take a walk or ride my bike. I'm not a big fisher person like these guys are, so they can talk more about that. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, to feel the fresh air after this long, very wet, cold winter.
Yeah, I mean, you can do these things in the winter, right? I mean, if
I
you're a hiker or a biker, you can do them all year. It's just that there's something about when it's long and it's cold. And
it's why God made Gore-Tex. That's what I always say, you know? My mother
Candy.
Used to say to me, go outside and blow the stink off you, you know, like halfway through winter. And it'd be okay, I guess I have
It does it.
Oof, so here we are.
The winter will do it. But there's something about the spring. I guess it's just more activity. I mentioned spring peeping. Spring peeping is going out to listen to the spring peepers. That's what I call it.
The frogs.
Do you have a recommendation for a place to go here and get an earful?
Anywhere you'll find vernal ponds, so ponds that fill with water in the spring, you'll start to hear the spring peepers. In fact, I attended a lecture last night on that, and the lecturer was saying that it's a great time in the next couple weeks to get out as the temperatures come up and they start peeping.
There's some place along the NCR Trail. I think it's in Moncton. Brooks, where there's these little, not ponds, but they just get a flooded area.
Yeah, vernal ponds.
Those are vernal ponds?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Spring ponds.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that's where I go to hear spring peepers. Your kids would love it, and you need to be there around dusk or so, right?
Dusk is usually the best time, and it's great to hear, and you can usually hear a couple different kinds of frogs calling.
Do a couple of things here during this hour of the show. I just want to tell our folks what to expect in this hour. Candy Thompson, we're going to talk to you about the Appalachian Trail.
Okay.
If you have an ambition this year to actually hike at least the Maryland stretch of the Appalachian Trail, which I think is about 40 miles.
Right.
Candy's done that. She's going to talk to us about it. Rona's had various adventures with her children in the great outdoors of Maryland, and she's going to tell us about some of those and some of her favorite places. And then there's this category, best you don't even know it's their place, a wonderful place that people just don't seem to know much about that our guests know about. So you're going to share some secrets with us in this hour of the show.
And then we'll have to kill you.
Okay.
Dan, you were asking what was the first thing I was going to do, and this Saturday I have plans to take my 5-year-old son down to the Pocomoke River for the yellow and white perch that are running. And I understand that's a great way to get a young one outside and hooked up. And I can't wait. He told me a couple weeks ago, Daddy, when can we go fishing? And I said, as soon as possible.
And with a 5-year-old, you want them to catch fish, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You want kids to get turned off from fishing for life by taking them out to catch a wily trout. No, you want to take them to where there's a run of fish. Well, there's a pretty good chance that they'll catch one, right?
Absolutely, and I understand that the perch are in the rivers now, and that should provide some great action.
Okay, I got to ask a question. I have never fished for perch in Maryland.
Okay.
And I love to fish, and I've never done this.
Uh-huh.
What is it like? What do you need to do that?
Not much. Light tackle. I'll probably use a fly rod. My son will probably use a small spinning rod and just small white bait fish imitations.
Something white?
Something little and white.
And white and rubbery.
And slow.
Or right. Minnows. You can use minnows, but don't wait too long, Brooks, because they're running and all of a sudden it'll shut off just like flipping a switch.
Okay. That's why I'm going Saturday.
All right. Well, there's a rite of spring, the perch run.
Yep.
Is it on now? I mean, what are we hearing about?
It is on now. The Eastern Shore, Tom O'Connell, who's our director of fisheries, he went out and, you know, on the word of somebody saying, they're running. I mean, literally, if you're with a group of people on Facebook, somebody will just say, now.
Right.
And everybody just sort of runs to either Allen's Fresh or, you know, on the Eastern Shore, any one of the rivers up near Tuckahoe. Y Mills is another great place. Up in Northeast, they actually used to have a yellow perch appreciation day where a person would dress in a yellow perch suit and run around, and kids could stand on the docks up there. And
do these fish run at the same time, the white and the yellow?
No.
I believe do the whites start and then the yellow follow them? Or is it the other way around?
Okay.
They used to call the yellow perch the people's fish, I think, because mm-hmm. it was so easy to catch. And people used to stand before there was the Bay Bridge and the new bridge over Cambridge. They used to stand on the old wooden bridges with just a simple fishing rod, and they were able to catch them.
And they're good eating.
Good eating.
Good
really
eating.
Good.
Very good.
Another thing that happens sort of suddenly, but we all wait for, is the shad run.
Mm.
And also recommend this for young people. If you're trying to get a son or daughter interested in fishing, you want to have a good experience and actually catch something that's a little bit exciting, there's the shad run. I think this is how I got my son hooked, pardon the pun, mm-hmm. on fishing with his friend on the rocks just below Conowingo.
Because the dam is pretty, and there's eagles above, and the parking lot is nice. And
that's the thing about spring. Okay, winter, I'm with you on winter. I love going outside in the winter.
Right.
But the spring, there's so much going on, and you can smell it. You
mm-hmm.
can, especially when the shad are running, you can smell these ocean-run fish that are in fresh water, which is an extraordinary thing when you think about it. You're standing in fresh water, and there's the smell of the ocean all of a sudden with all these fish coming. But Candy's right. There's eagles. There's
osprey.
There's
blue herons. They've got a rookery right there.
Yeah,
I mean, prehistoric looking bird nests that are like 6 feet wide.
Yeah, and there's the smell of spring in the air, the smell of sex in the air. It's all over the
and
place.
And the flowers are coming up.
Yeah, everything is happening all of a sudden.
I think the Conowingo Dam is kind of like a big sushi chef. It just chops up all the fish. And so the eagles and the osprey and the heron that live in those trees by the dam are swooping in, and is a fabulous place to take photographs if you have a long lens. There's a guy named David Lincolnsheim on Facebook who's got a page called the Conowingo Bald Eagles, and he has these beautiful pictures of mostly it's eagles, but he's got heron, and there's some peregrine falcons that are nesting up on the dam, and it is just amazing to watch these birds dive down and get their lunch.
And Brooks, since you know you're familiar with Deer Creek, and Sandy's familiar with Deer Creek and fishing for shad, the road that you take to Deer Creek through the town of Darlington that brings you there?
Down into the Susquehanna State Park.
Right.
Yep.
Mm. Along the way, there's an eagle's nest.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, birders and people with cameras park right there. You know, it's the same spot every year because I guess they use the same nest every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another spot where you could pull over for a few minutes, be very quiet, and maybe you'll see the eagle on its nest.
Be very, very
quiet. Candy Thompson, now with the Department of Natural Resources, Brooks Padenott with the Irvine Nature Center, and our own Rona Cabell, our monthly contributor to Midday on the Bay. Let's talk about state parks.
All right.
What's gone on in the state parks over the winter? What are we getting ready for in the spring?
Well, you know, I just wrote a piece for the Natural Resource Magazine, which comes out in the spring, one of four or five issues. And it was so interesting to go around to the parks people because Maryland State Parks get 10 million visitors a year. 6 million of them show up from Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Wow, yeah,
so
that's intense.
That's insane. Mm. So they spend a lot of time in the winter. They've got their checklist of what they want to fix up, and they get to work. Out west, the CCC cabins built in the 1930s, they've got new kitchens, they've got new bathrooms, they've got new floors, They got energy efficient stuff. Still look like the CCC cabins of 1930, but there's some amenities inside.
And which parks are those?
They're at Harrington Manor. And New Germany have the really great cabins, and those are musts for me every year. I get out there. Big stone fireplaces, rustic living rooms, you know, feels real good, little front porch.
And you can rent them.
You can rent
them. That's
why
they're
there. You go online. Right. Yep. You go online. DNR has a great website. The one thing I like about their camp reservations, both for cabins and for tent sites, is you can get on and look at, there's a picture of where your tent will be, you know, positioned, so you can go, oh, that's not enough shade, or, oh, that's too much shade, or whatever.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And just move your way around the, you know, the circle till you find the site you like.
But if you want to be around when there are fewer humans, right?
Right. And, I mean, there are places in almost every park. And as a matter of fact, as I was making my list today, I made my list is based on places where there are fewer people. So that's...
Share. Have you already... you already mentioned... Oh, okay. You don't want to share all
no,
those?
No. I mean, but back to my original point, I mean, Point Lookout's got a new boat ramp. It's got a new bathhouse, you know, so that when you get all gritty and sandy, you can go wash your feet off and that kind of thing. Janes Island, which is a fabulous park, kind of off the beaten path, down near Crisfield.
Yeah.
They've got an expanded camp store and, you know, snack shop. Hmm. Cunningham Falls, which had really bad sandy damage. Hmm. They finally went in this winter and really cleared up all the stuff that they have.
That's in Frederick County? Cunningham Falls.
Yeah, that's up, right. Yeah, on the way to Gettysburg.
Right.
On
and
15.
Near Catoctin.
Yes.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, they've got a brand new nature center at Cunningham Falls. The parks have really put on a show this year. You know, the parks have 16 new rangers. NRP, Natural Resources Police, have 19 new police officers. So these are the things that they sort of do to get to really get ready. 600 seasonals they have to hire every year, from lifeguards to snack shop, you know, operators, whatever.
We're going to take our first break here. This is Candy Thompson from the Department of Natural Resources. Welcome back. It's Midday on the Bay. Dan Rodrigues here with Rona Cabell, as usual, from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. But also joining us today is Brooks Paternot, director of the Irvine Nature Center, and Candy Thompson, longtime outdoors writer and columnist for The Sun, now with the Department of Natural Resources. James in Edgewater wanted to tell us about a vernal pond. Hello, James.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I was just down in Edgewater. And there's a little complex with basically a drainage pond for their parking area. And the peepers were going crazy right in, you know, the middle of the noontime. I heard like 8 different frogs' voices just singing because they were happy. It was really cool.
That's great.
Can you tell us where that is? More specific?
Just off of 214 on the way to Mayo Beach.
Off 214 on the way to Mayo Beach is a parking lot of what?
Well, there's a pond there. There's several of them along the side of the road.
Oh, okay.
And if you stop, you can just listen and you'll hear them. It was really kind of like a joyful thing, you know?
Yeah.
It is.
Definitely.
Thank you very much for that, James. And actually, you probably hear them without the windows being rolled down. So you drive along, you'll hear that. Find a place to pull over and enjoy that sound. But in the middle of the day, these frogs are really eager to get rolling, aren't they?
come on, yeah.
Let's hear from Lyle, who's calling from Frederick. You're on Midday Next. Hi, Lyle.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what did you want to recommend for us? So where do you go?
I was just talking about, you were talking about the state parks.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I hit Gambrel State Park just west of Frederick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got about 5 trails up there. I go hiking all the time. They got 5 trails. We've got just, you know, the snow down here in town in Frederick is just, you know, the piles in the parking lots. But up there, the other day, the birds were out singing, and it was perfect time to go hiking.
Wow, that sounds great. I don't think I've been there.
Oh, that's
Candy,
a nice
you
park.
Did all these parks once upon a time,
oh,
right?
Oh, I'm crazy. I've done them, yeah.
What can you say about that one?
Gambrel's is a really nice park. It's out, as a matter of fact, if you're going to do a piece of the Appalachian Trail, Gambrel's State Park is a good place to stop by, you know, I mean, take a rest, have a lunch, do whatever.
So the state park runs along the trail in part?
There are a bunch of state parks that sort of line the trail, you know, on its 40-mile clip through Maryland.
Well, this is a good time for me to ask you about that then.
Okay.
Let's say you had an ambition to do the Appalachian Trail, which, you know, Georgia to Maine. Mm-hmm. You're not going to do all of it. Maybe you do have a plan to do that. But say you wanted to just do a piece of it this year. You wanted to do the Maryland piece. What does that look like? Where is it? You mentioned it's 40 miles long. What's the terrain like?
Really rocky. I mean, it is not a walk in the park. Do not think that, you know, you're just going to go tra-la, tra-la in your sneakers and, you know, and maybe a water bottle. It's a real hike. It is one of the shorter segments of the Appalachian Trail, state segments. But it'll wear you out. It'll make you a little crazy. It also allows you, though, you can pick up just segments of it, which is really nice. You can pick up 5 or 6 miles at a clip. The Potomac Appalachian Trail Club, PATC, has a website, and you can look and plot your own sort of, your own trip.
Now, when you say you can do it in 5 mile pieces, to 7 mile pieces,
yeah,
maybe, you mean that there's a town where you could stop and get a hotel room, or there's a camping area nearby? Is that what you mean?
What I mean is you can put a car at one end and a car at the other end.
Okay.
So you only have to walk the 5 to 7 miles. As a matter of fact, we as Evening Sunners one time did a nice piece of it that led us to Weaverton Cliffs, which looks down on the Potomac River, which looks down on Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry, yeah.
Beautiful place to have lunch. Everybody seems to think so. It is on the Appalachian Trail, so it's a really nice walk.
If you wanted to do the whole thing,
mm-hmm,
the whole Maryland piece, 40 miles, what do you need, 4 or 5 days for that? You need a week?
No. I mean, it depends on how much time you want to take. You know, if you want to speed walk it, you can do it. Well, we know people who did it one day. They're crazy. And they weren't running. But, I mean, 2 days? I mean, I think you could knock it off in 2 days, 3 days.
Okay.
Would probably be a better, you know, depending on how good you are, how old or young your group of participants would be.
And there are camping sites along the way.
There are, well, not right. There are huts. There are, Appalachian Trail has a hut system. And the Ed Garvey Hut is right along the trail. It's gorgeous. I was there when they put it together. They took it up in the, I mean, they literally had to carry the whole thing up and put it together on site. Very nicely done. I recommend it. It's
okay, and you mentioned this website again. You said Potomac
Appalachian Trail Club, PATC.
Okay, and they'll help you plot out your trek.
Their website is fabulous. I mean, you can just go on there and say, okay, I feel like doing this much. You know, we have 2 cars, and you can pick off a hunk.
Ellie wrote in to say, I hiked the AT last year for 4.5 months.
Woo!
She devoted 4.5 months to the Appalachian Trail. Best experience of my life. She says, practice by going to the Dolly Sods Wilderness for a week. Brooks?
That's a beautiful place. I spent a week there about 2 years ago. Fantastic wilderness.
Is that West Virginia?
West Virginia, yes.
The coldest I've ever been in my life.
And what month were you there? Do you remember?
I was with Ernie Imhoff. No, I wasn't with Ernie Imhoff, a former colleague. But I was out camping there. I guess it was February or March.
Oh, okay. So asking for it.
I was asking
okay.
for it, yeah.
Brooks, what can you tell us about it?
I just think it's a beautiful area. It's one of the closest true wilderness areas, meaning, you know, distance from a road that you can get with without seeing structures or anything like that.
It looks like Ireland, doesn't it?
It does, and it's varied, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some high meadow areas that are beautiful. And then you can get into some river valleys, and it's just gorgeous.
Now, even though it's called a wilderness, Dolly Sods Wilderness, so the Appalachian Trail does go through there? Or
I don't think the AT goes through
there. I'm sorry, she's saying just practice by going there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are marked trails.
Yes, there are marked trails, but as far as I know, they're not huts. I mean, it's a camp in tents area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Ellie, for mentioning that. This is the second or third time we've heard about Dolly Sods, and that's a place I need to get to. Rona Cabell, favorite place to hike? One of your favorite places to hike? Maybe not so far away from Baltimore.
I like to go somewhere and be really surprised. So I like Rock State Park because you walk about 1.5 miles and then voila, waterfall.
Mm-hmm. Same this is in Harford County.
Harford County, yeah, right near Deer Creek where you were talking about fishing for shad. I also was surprised recently to learn that there was a beautiful waterfall on the Jones Falls, Round Falls, which is on the Jones Falls bike trail. Another great place around here is Soldier's Delight, which is you're driving through the sprawl of Owings Mills, and then suddenly you see a couple deer if you're going at night, and then there's this beautiful serpentine landscape. It's a great place to hike. Candy was just there the other day, so she's been there more recently than I have. But
Soldier's Delight, it's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
It's called an environmental area. It's not a park.
It has the largest concentration of threatened and endangered plants of any public space in Maryland. So you're going to see things that you're not going to see anyplace else.
Yeah, it's a very unique ecosystem.
Yeah.
Debbie's calling from Owings Mills to mention Soldier's Delight. Debbie, what would you like to add to that?
Oh, yeah. My source of refuge of living in Owings Mills has been to hike that Soldier's Delight trails every week now for 10 years. I am amazed what you can see there. Even if you walk slowly, different insects I haven't seen. But as your participant mentioned, all the different wildflowers. By the way, Brooks, I want to give my accolades to Irvine Nature Center because there's places to walk there. There's a wildlife garden there. My kids have gone to summer camp there for 4 years. That's a wonderful place.
Wonderful. So great to hear. Thank you.
Megan's in Upper Co. Go right ahead, Megan.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about part of Gunpowder Falls State Park in the Hereford area. Off Mount Carmel Road, if you go down Macemore Road, there's a family of beavers. I think it's part of the Lefty Cray Fishing Trail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think Dan knows it well.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
I know that whole family of beavers. I've been in there, Dan. I've been in there. What is a beaver thing called?
A lodge.
A lodge. I've been to the lodge, yes. They had me over for dinner. We chewed on some bark together.
Well, it's a great place to hike, you know, and just see wildlife and just really watch the beavers. And it's a great place.
Right, Dan?
You remember what Jacques Cousteau said? The beaver is the most romantic animal in the forest, especially in the spring. But let me tell you, she's right about that, because if you get on the NCR trail or even off the trail and just hike along the Gunpowder River there in the area she's talking about, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see a beaver, and that beaver is going to be so unimpressed with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, right, Brooks? Those
beavers are much better fishermen than we are, Dan.
They're great.
Much better.
Yeah, and they see a lot of human beings, so they don't really get startled very much when they see you anymore.
No, not at all. I've actually run into them before on the Morgan Run, which is over, flows in and out of Liberty, I believe. And I was hiking along, and I thought somebody had brought their dog and was letting their dog swim in the creek and ruining my fishing spot. But lo and behold, it was a family of beavers.
I saw a beaver there. I thought it was as big as a coffee table I used to own. it does. You know what, Candy? You ever been in the river when the beaver comes by swimming?
Yeah.
It's a little startling. It can be a little startling.
When they slap their tail, it can be quite a surprise.
Yeah. But that's a great thing to do up on the Gunpowder. You have to see all kinds of birds up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a treasure here, not far from Baltimore. Please be gentle as you use it. It's really a treasure for the Baltimore metropolitan area. Other places that you like to hike. Brooks, what about you? Do you have a place you like to go for a hike?
I love Patapsco Valley State Park, particularly the Marriottsville area. For some reason, I just really gravitate towards there, take my kids there. Great trails. You can get down along a river there. I think it's a wonderful place.
Now, that's interesting. I haven't been that far out there in the Marriottsville area.
It's kind of between Ellicott City and Sykesville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. But how do you get there?
You can go out 70 and then up Marriottsville Road, and it's just on the right.
Okay, look for it on the map, and you just like to hike along the stream there.
Yeah, it's great. You hike down towards the stream, and you can walk along the stream, and then hike back up to where they have parking, and they have some open spaces too. Great picnic areas for the family. Good facilities. It's not very crowded. It's not a crowded area at all.
Okay, and Rona, did you want to mention something else? Great Falls, Virginia? Was that your list?
Yeah, I love going there. I don't go there as much as I'd like because it's kind of a haul.
This is the Potomac, right?
Yeah, the Potomac. But you hike along there and you see the beautiful gorge and the rapids. It's just beautiful. It is kind of, you know, an hour and 15 minutes, so I don't go there as much as I would like, but I recommend that. And also Harper's Ferry is another great place to hike, and you see the same sort of view with like the water and the rapids and the rocks and the gorge. And
right.
That is a place where you can sort of go at your own pace. There's people who are there who are very serious hikers, and then there are people who just sort of meander and then go into town and get an ice cream and go home. So it's sort of, you know, for everybody. And then there's amazing history. And I did want to say earlier, Candy mentioned Point Lookout, and I think that is one of my favorite parks in the state. It is so pretty, and the history there, there's a Civil War POW camp, and it's just extremely moving to read the history of what happened there. It's where the Potomac and the Bay meet, and I don't know if I haven't been there in a while, but it used to be that every Saturday and Sunday from spring until fall, it was filled with people from El Salvador who had sort of discovered it, and it reminded them of home. And they would have soccer matches and cook asada. So in addition to being beautiful, it smelled like delicious grilled meat.
That's great.
A lot of churches have baptisms in the water. So it's just there's a lot of cultural things going on there that just make it really interesting.
Did you want to add to that, Candy?
Actually, it's absolutely true. There are parks that have been adopted by new Americans. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sandy Point State Park is another one. Gambrels has, Seneca Creek State Park in Montgomery County is another one, which has a beautiful pond in it. And someday, I guess DNR would like to put a beach in there as well when it gets the money. Any place there's water, you know, DNR, this Park Service, they know they're going to have a full house.
And mention of Harper's Ferry and the Potomac River makes me want to mention the CNO Trail, of course, the Chesapeake and Ohio Trail, and the old canal and the towpath, which is the trail now. And speaking of spring peepers and vernal ponds and turtles, your kids will have a great time as those canals, the old canal floods, they are flooded, you'll see plenty of frogs in there and turtles as
big
you
turtles,
hike along,
yeah.
And some big turtles, and sometimes five or six of them sitting on a log together.
It's stunning, yes.
It's kind of cool. It's Midday on the Bay. Dan Rodericks here with Rona Cabell, as usual, but also joining us today, Candy Thompson, longtime outdoors columnist for The Sun, now with the Department of Natural Resources, and Brooks Paternot, director of Irvine Nature Center. And up ahead, what do we have? Oh, we're going to share some more secrets, really? Are you guys really going to? Are you really going to do this? Okay.
I'll give it up.
Best places that you may never have heard of coming up on Midday on the Bay. This is a funny tweet from Linus, who says, Pennsylvania and Maryland Appalachian Trail, where boots go to die. So
absolutely
so
true.
Is there much of a grade on the Maryland stretch? I mean, are you hiking up? Are you hiking down?
Which way are you going? North or south, dude? Come on. Work with me.
I'm sorry. But, you mentioned there's a lot of rocks.
Right. But, I mean, it's Weaverton Cliffs, for example, is straight up.
Okay.
And you've got to go one way or the other way
and
on that.
And they don't have an elevator there?
No, but let me tell you a little secret.
don't.
If you want to say you crossed Maryland, right, and you don't want to, like, hurt yourself,
yeah,
you go out to Hancock, and that's the narrowest part of Maryland. It's 1 mile long.
It is.
You walk along Pennsylvania Avenue. You have now walked across Maryland, okay, as far as I'm concerned.
They have a Pennsylvania Avenue in Hancock?
Yes, they do.
Oh, is that a thing where people want to cross?
They used to have a celebration where the town would dress up and walk, you know, from
Pennsylvania to West Virginia?
From the Potomac River to the Pennsylvania line. It doesn't take very long, naturally.
Yeah.
It is the narrowest part of any state in the United States.
So you can say you crossed Maryland within, how long does that take you?
It took me, I stopped and took some pictures, of course, but it took me about, 25 minutes?
Okay.
Yeah. And then you're done, and you can go get ice cream in Hancock.
Dan Lawrence tweets a question, what's the best hiking in Anne Arundel County? Anne Arundel County, any ideas there?
Well, I could cheat a little bit and say you could go to the Patuxent Wildlife Refuge.
Yes, that's a really good place.
I mean, it's Laurel. And Laurel's like in Howard County, Anne Arundel County, and
Prince George's County.
The North Tract of the Patuxent Research Refuge is in Anne Arundel. I used to cover it, so I'm sure.
And I'm right?
Yes,
is that
right,
the best spot?
Right.
So you can the public can access that place?
Yes, you do need to sign a waiver because there's unexploded ordnance. So you have to
small problem.
So
small
it's a good place for kids.
They're little bombs. They're little bombs.
They haven't actually. They actually haven't found a bomb there. Well,
oh,
okay. Let me back up.
Rona, you are funny.
All right. So the property was part of Fort Meade. In the early 90s, it transferred over to the Department of Interior, but they couldn't remove all the bombs. So they're still, like Candy said, little bombs. I don't think they've ever had an incident of one actually going off, but they still require you to fill out a waiver and leave it in your car.
And if you're a little squeamish, you can go to the main tract.
Right.
Which has a great visitor center. It has a great place for kids to fish. Nice decks, and you can also bird watch there.
Okay. And if you're lazy, they have a trolley.
They do, electric trolley.
But Dan, this reminds me of last summer when I went to Assateague, and they had found some unexploded ordnance down at Assateague. I was actually taking my son to go crabbing down there, and unfortunately we got turned around, but headed out to Herring Creek and found a great space to crab there.
They were removing something when you were there?
They were. They had actually discovered some World War II ordnance.
Right. Because the area that you were going to is usually open to the public.
Correct.
Right.
And some great crabbing, great hiking, bird watching,
horses.
And oystering and clamming.
And horses on Assateague.
And horses, too.
And horses.
I wanted to mention Potomac Wildlife Center. What is it again?
It's called the Patuxent Research.
Patuxent Research.
Refuge.
Research refuge.
It's where Rachel Carson did her initial work on DDT, I believe. Right. Is that right?
And it's where the whooping cranes, that's where they birth the whooping cranes every year. It's the best place to do it.
And so I also want to mention that there was a bluebird project there some years ago to install a bunch of those Musselman bluebird boxes. And the bluebirds, last time I checked, were there in big numbers. So
it's enormous, and there's two entrances. So there's a main entrance, which I'm not sure what county that officially is in. But then there's the North Tract, which we were talking about before, which is kind of off of BW Parkway in the Maryland City area. So if you look on a map, you'll see you can't get from here to there. You have to go 25 minutes around to get to the other side.
Okay.
Because they're such sensitive species, they won't make a road that goes through the refuge.
And bombs.
But it is open to the public.
It is open to the public. They have a terrific visitor center.
Yep.
Patuxent Research Refuge.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Rona, Heidi in Baltimore joining us now on Midday on the Bay. Hi, Heidi.
Hello. How are you, Dan? I'm enjoying the show, and I also listened to Mr. Louvre at Notre Dame. It was very inspiring. But I want to mention that we shouldn't forget Grünwald's Lichen Park, which is right in the city. And it has at least 14 miles of hiking trails through the woods, valleys, and hills. A lot of history to offer historic sites because this was an old estate. And we do have extra activities on second Sunday starting in April with three little trains running, and people can get on little model trains and also hike to the Nature Center and then do whatever discovery they want to do.
Heidi, thank you very much for bringing up Lichen Park because it gets us back on track here. We've gotten off our agenda for the day. Rona wants to say something about that.
Yeah, Brooks and I were just talking about what big fans we are of Lichen Park, which sometimes gets a bad rap in Baltimore for being known for something other than wildlife. But I was there on one of these community days. They indeed have this really cool train that you can ride in, and it goes all the way around the park. And I was there on one of these community days, and they, in addition to having the train, they had horseback riding. They had these guys who, for $3 or $4, you could get on a pony and ride. And it was fantastic, except that my daughter has now become hooked on horseback riding. And I think I'm going to go broke. I just wrote a check today for horseback riding camp.
Uh-oh.
So, but it is great. And I think we were saying it's one of the largest urban wilderness areas on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Brooks? Is that right?
It's tremendous. I love the Gwynns Falls Lichen Park, and the Gwynns Falls Trail, I think, is just a wonderful place. And as I was mentioning to Rona at the break, I love the paved part, especially for strollers. It's good when you have the really little ones in tow.
I was going to say, it sounds like a great place to take kids.
Yes,
and there's
it
an
is.
Old church that you can kind of climb around, this old historic church. I'm not sure the history of it, but it's great. I mean, it's a really underused gem.
Jerry in Elkton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thank you, Dan. I have to call. It's just too much. I heard the Tucson Wildlife Research Center mentioned.
Yeah.
And I went there last October. It is a paradise for children. The museum, if you can imagine the Smithsonian in miniature, Natural History Smithsonian, mm-hmm. placed out in the county there. That's exactly what it is for children. All interactive exhibits. There's a great gift store. It just engages you as a child the minute you walk in the door. It's awesome. And I went particularly for the Rachel Carson Expo. It was like a commemorative of her work, her research work, or was it Rachel Carson Day? It's embarrassing. I can't remember. But they had an exhibit of her black and white photographs of Rachel Carson working in a long hallway that was just awesome.
Okay.
I want to mention that because I had never been there before. It's on the parkway going to Washington.
Right. It's off the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Jerry. Matt and Towson, we'll go to you next. Hello. Matt, are you there?
Taking a call.
Yeah, go right ahead, Matt. What do you want to recommend?
Yeah, real quick shout-out to Brooks again on Irvine. Man, my daughter loves that place, and even the indoor stuff where you have, like, the nighttime thing or, you know, in the nighttime creatures of the bats and the foxes and all that.
Thanks, Matt.
Sure. Place has been around forever. Crazy name, obviously, shows you we've been on the Mason-Dixon line. Robert E. Lee Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well,
yeah, especially now that they've redone it.
It closed down. It was open. I used to ride my bike over there. I used to hike. They had some neat trails. You had to look out for the light rail so you wouldn't get run over. But
but there weren't any bombs, right?
No bombs.
No bombs.
No, but it was a really cool park, and people said back in the day you could rent boats or something. But just two quite quick questions. What's the latest? And also, does anybody know how that got that name? I mean, so I guess I'll take this off the air, I guess.
What's the latest on what? Robert E. Lee Park? What? Rona, you wanted to talk about Robert E. Lee.
I think you're asking about the boats, right? And if that would be a possibility to rent them again. I talked to somebody who works for the city parks department. Robert E. Lee is now in sort of a hybrid situation where the county manages it, but the city owns the land. And since the county took over managing, they've spent several million dollars, and it really does show. In fact, the last time I was there, my walk was interrupted by a county maintenance guy cutting the grass, which I'd never seen before there. So it was good to see that, you know, they were maintaining and getting rid of the invasive trees. I think they would like to bring boats back to Robert E. Lee, but it's a little bit complicated with liability issues. And I know that it's on the radar of people in the Chesapeake Bay community because it is one of those places that it would be great to have more public access. And another place where that would also be great is Druid Hill Lake right by the zoo. There's like a piece of land that's not actually the zoo, but it's attached to the zoo. And that used to also be a place where long ago there were boats. And it's another place they're talking about. So in progress, I think, are the discussions.
Candy, where's a great place to take photographs?
Photographs.
I know you love to take pictures.
I do love to take pictures, and there's a couple places that I would really love. You've got to go to McKee Beshers, which is down in Montgomery County.
Say it again, McKee?
McKee-Besher, B-E-S-H-E-R-S. It's down along the C&O Canal in Montgomery County. In the summer, it has sunflowers as far as you can see. I mean, just gorgeous sunflowers.
Really?
They just
grow wild there?
They've been there for a long time. They're cultivated.
They're cultivated.
I mean, cultivated in that, you know, you can't go driving through, you know, you can't go driving through them. It's a field.
You mean they just come up?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the seeds fall,
okay,
and they come back up.
All right.
Another great place to go would be Swallow Falls State Park out in Garrett County.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful waterfalls, cold. The trail runs right along, you know,
Yucca River.
The old growth trees. Some of them, of course, got sandyized, but just another beautiful place. And Assateague. How can you not want to take pictures at Assateague?
If I may add, somewhere more local, Sherwood Gardens in Guilford, coming up for the tulips.
Yeah.
It really is a little urban gem.
That's outdoors. It kind of fits with this email from Deb, who says, I've developed a wonderful relationship with my own backyard. She says, I go outside every day, rain or shine, snow, whatever, different times of day and night, and hobble along with my walking stick. She mentions that she's had a particularly long winter because she's been recovering from a foot injury.
I listen to the sounds of the wind and the birds, investigating the changes that I hear every day. It is something short of miraculous to me because I almost lost my feet, so I am grateful beyond measure for the joy of my senses, smelling the damp leaves, making friends with trees, feeling the moist hush of a foggy night, appreciating the cycles of weather that we are really fortunate to have here in Maryland. We do have a variety of weather.
Yeah,
certainly not a boring place for weather. And the one place she wants to mention is that she says she recently spent a few hours exploring the National Colonial Farm in Accokeek, Maryland, southern PG County, located on the Potomac, directly across the river from Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. There are several beautifully preserved historic buildings and barns, a sturdy pier on the river, easy Pebble Beach access, and a visitor's center there. So thank you for mentioning that. Again, National Colonial Farm in Accokeek.
Another great place, Dan. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with state parks, so I feel comfortable saying this. The Washington Suburban Sanitary Commission, which runs the water for, you know, the D.C. suburbs, has a 20,000 azalea garden. So you can
So where is that,
It's Candy. Right on the Montgomery.
Sandy was a storm.
I answer to anything.
Where is it?
It's right on the Montgomery-Howard County line. It's where Tridelphia, it's where those two, you know, Rocky Gorge and Tridelphia.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have 20,000 azaleas of all varieties.
Wow.
Right at Brighton Dam. So if you get out of Matt, type
Whoa,
Brighton.
That's a good
Google
one.
Brighton Dam.
Yeah, that's a good one, Candy.
Whatever.
I haven't heard that one before. Well, you mentioned the storm a couple of times.
I did.
Ellen in Anne Arundel County wanted to mention a hike bike trail in Anne Arundel County. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. We have a hike and bike trail that goes from the airport into Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
We have, if you want water access, we have Fort Smallwood Park, which is on the bay, Downs Park, which is on the bay, Quiet Waters Park, which is on South River. I'm trying to think of what else. We've got Ticknet Park. We've got Kinder Park.
Ellen, we're short of time, but I appreciate you mentioning all those, especially I forgot about the hike bike trail.
Yes.
That goes from near the airport to Annapolis.
I think one of the best kept secrets in Anne Arundel County, which we forgot to mention earlier, Kinder Farm Park.
Yeah.
It's one of the only farm parks around here, and you can go and you can hike and you can ride your bike, but you can also see beautiful animals if your kids are into pigs or whatever. So there's a lot to do there too.
Nice to have you back with us, Candy Sandy Thompson.
Dan Dawn, it's been great.
Candy Thompson from the Department of Natural Resources, and thank you, Rona.
Thank
Rona
you.
Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. Thank you very much, everybody, for your contributions to this hour. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us for our second hour. Time again for Midday on the Bay, our monthly show produced in partnership with the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And it wouldn't be produced if not for a staff reporter from the CBJ. That's Rona Cabell. Rona, welcome back to the show. Nice to see you.
Thank you. You too.
So thanks for being here. And look, we got some good news to share today, some bad news, some in-between news about the Chesapeake Bay, about the environment in general, all sorts of neat stories to talk about. I just want to mention to our listeners, I have a real treat for you in this hour of the show, the yellow-crowned night heron. We're going to sort of celebrate this beautiful and rare bird that's being seen in Baltimore, in a specific area of Baltimore City. And we have some photographs to share with you contributed by an area photographer that we'll be sharing with you during this hour of the show. You can find them on the Dan Rodericks Facebook page. But here in the early part of the show, Rona, we haven't had a chance to talk to you about the environment and the legislative session, the General Assembly session that ended up a couple of weeks ago. So before, let's go into some of these things. Number one, the stormwater bill. Let's talk about that because we had mentioned it on an earlier show, and as you predicted, there were attempts to repeal it.
Right. This session was stormwater, stormwater, stormwater. There were 20 bills that were attempting to roll back the stormwater bill that was passed in 2012. You might remember this was called the rain tax by some. This was a provision that Baltimore City and the nine largest counties would create some sort of a stormwater utility that would be used to assess homeowners a fee of some sort to basically deal with, treat the stormwater coming off of their homes. And so there were 20 bills this session to try to roll it back, delay it, make some counties immune from it. In the end, a very weak provision prevailed for just Carroll and Frederick County that allows them to use property tax to pay their the stormwater utility fee.
Do you have any idea why the Maryland Department of Environment went along with that? Because the idea was to keep this away from property taxes. They have a separate fee dedicated to stormwater eradication instead of it coming out of general operating budgets of the counties.
Well, it was interesting because not too long before this passed, the counties, Carroll, Frederick, and actually Harford, which had thought about trying to repeal its fee under David Craig's leadership, had written a letter to Maryland Department of the Environment and the Attorney General asking, hey, is this all right if we do this? And they got back a very stern rebuke saying, no, it is not all right if you do this. You are required to do this. And every county is doing this. And here's why it's important. And then this passed. And I don't know, maybe they were just worn down. Mm-hmm. But also, What is in effect happening is Carroll and Frederick are still having to pay the fee. It's not as though they're exempt from the fee. They still have to pay it. And if they want to use property tax to pay it, in my opinion, that's foolish because it's really an impervious surface tax. And you can have a very large property, say a $10 million estate. It doesn't necessarily mean that your home is large. You may, most of that property may be in wilderness. So, To me, it makes much more sense to have a fair assessment of impervious surface.
Based on impervious
right,
surface.
Exactly. Yeah. And charge it that way. But if they don't want to do it, as long as they're still paying it, I guess it's not Maryland Department of the Environment must have figured, you know what, let's stop fighting this and let's just, you know, get them to pay what they owe and move on.
So if you whine long enough, you get your way. With the MDE in the state. That's all. That's Dan's editorial comment. All right.
No comment from me on
Let's
that
go
one.
Back. Let's go. Here's another topic we talked about earlier, the black liquor bill. You have to explain black liquor and what happened in the session this year.
Okay. So black liquor is a byproduct of the paper making process. Paper companies burn waste and use it to make energy. They've been doing it for decades. It's an age-old process. In the last few years, there's been a push to get black liquor out of the renewable energy standard portfolio. And what that means is companies that burn the black liquor have been getting renewable energy credits that would otherwise go to wind and solar and geothermal and other renewable energy sources. And they've been basically these companies like BGE, they have to buy a certain amount of renewable energy. And they've been spending their renewable energy dollars on black liquor. And so the idea was not to ban the burning of black liquor, but just to get it out of the renewable energy standard. And once again, this bill failed. And the reason it failed was because paper companies, all out of state, except for one, which would have been grandfathered in on the bill, paper companies and their union workers lobbied hard and said that this would affect jobs if this black liquor wasn't allowed to be part of the standard. And they prevailed again. So as of now, this industrial process is still considered a renewable energy under Maryland's law.
Rona, we've also talked about phosphorus and the new management tool that's supposed to reduce the amount of this pollutant, phosphorus, going into the waterways along the shores. So any progress there in this session?
The only progress is in getting the new phosphorus management tool further delayed. Shore Democrat Jim Mathias tried to pass a bill to require an economic study of the phosphorus legislation. The Maryland Department
Another of... Another study.
Yes.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it's going to have a huge effect. About half the farms on the Eastern Shore, according to University of Maryland's research, have an oversaturation of phosphorus and are going to have less. Now, what that means is the chicken manure that farmers put on the fields, they're not going to be able to put it on the fields anymore. Perhaps not at all, or at least not in the numbers that they have been putting it on. And so this is going to have a huge economic effect. And the Maryland Department of Agriculture has been trying, in my opinion, valiantly to put in this phosphorus standard. And it has been delayed over the last year. It has been delayed several times, and it's going to be delayed further with this economic study that they now have to do.
pesticides, another thing that we talked about when we were looking at what was going to be happening in the legislative session.
Some good news on pesticides. A pesticide reporting fee was passed, and that will make companies like Bayer that make the pesticides have to register the chemicals. There already is a fee, but they raised the fee by $10, and that will create about $127,000 in the budget to start a pesticide database. And what that means is
back up a little bit. This is something I assumed we had.
Right.
But we actually don't have an accounting of pesticides in use in Maryland.
We don't have it. The Maryland Department of Agriculture has said that they can get it if they need it. In other words, if there's a problem and a farmer, say in Glen Arm, is spraying something and people are getting sick, the Maryland Department of Agriculture can find out what was being sprayed and, you know, get that information to the public. But barring some sort of epidemic like that, there isn't really a way to know. If my neighbor spraying something and I want to know what it is, I don't have a way to know that. Hmm. So this database would get us started. It would get us started in knowing what's going on. And I would say that this is not only important for human health, but it's very important for animals like bees, frogs, bats. We're having a lot of issues with these animals dying, and we don't know why. And there's a lot of research going on that there could be some sort of endocrine disruptor with pesticides. But in order to really figure out what's going on, you really need to know what's being sprayed.
So some progress there.
Yes.
All right. Now we get to a story that I found a little bit weird. Okay. Steny Hoyer, Congressman Hoyer, shows up in Annapolis where he used to be, president of the Senate years ago before
right.
Mike Miller. Boy, what a memory I have. That goes back a ways. But anyway, he shows up there to express opposition to a planned wind energy farm in Somerset County in southern Maryland.
It is a puzzler, Dan. It's weird because this is the first time in, I think, 2 decades that Steny Hoyer has gone back to Annapolis to testify on anything. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to stop this wind farm from being built on the eastern shore because he said it would interfere with the Patuxent River Naval Air Station's radar signal. Now, the Navy said that it could be worked out, that if the wind turbines didn't spin at the certain times that the radar system was going, that this wouldn't be a problem. And there was a lot riding on this, Dan, because there are many farmers in Somerset County that would be able to participate in this farm by adding a wind turbine to their farm and making some money that would, you know, offset the cost of running a farm these days, which
right.
is high.
Right. And we'd put people to work actually building these things and
absolutely.
Constructing them.
It was a $200 million investment.
And what gets me is the Navy said, okay, we're cool with this. Go ahead and build the farm. And if we're concerned, if the concern is real, that it affects our radar system, the turbines we'll shut them down and we'll work this out.
Right.
So why did Hoyer show up to testify against it?
Well, what he said was that, every 10 years or so, the government undertakes this process called the Base Realignment and Closure Act. And Maryland has lost and also benefited from this when certain bases close and then other bases move. So as Aberdeen Proving Ground has grown a bunch and Fort Meade has grown a bunch, other bases across the country have closed. And he said he's worried that because this base is such an economic engine in southern Maryland that maybe the Navy would decide to close it and move somewhere, and that would jeopardize...
Because of the wind farm?
Because of the wind farm.
Even though now they're saying they're okay with it.
Right. So what the bill did was it postponed this for a year, but the wind company, Pioneer Wind, Pioneer Green, is saying, hey, that was a $4 million investment we spent here working on this, and we're not necessarily sure we're going to stick around for a year. So it may, in fact, have killed it. And what's interesting is climate change. This naval base is right on the Patuxent River, which is not immune from sea level rise or climate change. So you would think it would be a good thing to invest in wind energy to sort of offset this detrimental effects of climate change
right.
and sea level rise.
Where's O'Malley on this? This is his baby, right?
Well, interesting. He's been very pro wind, and I personally think it's a passion of his and not just something he says.
Rona Cabell from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. One more issue from the General Assembly I wanted to ask you about because I wrote a column about it. We did a segment of Midday on this topic, and that is a program, Open Space in Maryland, which has been raided over and over again by the General Assembly and by governors to pay for other things. It just hasn't been fully funded in years. There's a waiting list, we're told, of some 145 farmers in Maryland
waiting to get their development rights of their land turned over to the state, to sell them to the state through Program Open Space so that they can continue to be farmers and have their land in ag preservation. What happened there? What's the bottom line with this?
Well, you're right. The open space hasn't been fully funded, and the state now owes open space $100 million that it hasn't paid back. What the state did was it took the cash out of open space and replaced the cash with bond funds. And that works out all right if the state is actually ready to pay back the bond fund. And in this case, it wasn't. So
it was borrowing money give the program open space.
Right. And the way open space works is percentage of the transfer tax, 0.5% of the transfer tax goes into buying properties.
It's very small. Every mm-hmm. time there's a transfer tax, mm-hmm. a real estate transaction, what is it? 0.5%?
Yes. Yeah, so like
goes into program open space.
$500, $1,000, you know, yeah. just a small piece. So the idea is when demand is high and there's a lot of transactions and a lot of development pressure, the fund is high.
Right.
And when demand is low, the fund is low. The problem is that you might have some properties that come open that open space would like to buy, and it needs to have the cash ready to be nimble because it's competing with developers, and developers can't always be as nimble, and that can be an incentive for a seller. So you have an offer from the state in hand to preserve your land, and then you have a higher offer from a developer to develop the land, but you won't get your money right away, and he wants to buy it under option and all these other constraints. So the state's offer looks pretty attractive, but the state can't even make the offer if it doesn't have the cash.
Rona, thank you for that wrap-up of the General Assembly session of 2014. This is Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And joining us when we get back, Dave Lichtenheim, photographer who lives in Ellicott City, has been taking pictures of a beautiful bird that's taken up residence and nesting in the middle of the city, in the middle of Baltimore. We'll tell you about that when we get back and how you can see some photographs. Our producers, Jonathan Aaron and senior producer Nikki Gamer, posted some information on my Facebook page that gets you to the Maryland State Board of Elections site and tells you about voter registration. Paperwork has to be into the Board of Elections by June 3rd to change voter registration. So if you're a Democrat, you want to vote in the Republican primary or vice versa, or if you're an independent and you want to vote in either primary on June 24th, you have until June 3rd to make up your mind to do that. Dan Rodericks here. Now continuing with this hour of the show, Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell, staff writer from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. If you stand by the bridge at Wyman Park Drive on the east entrance of Druid Hill Park, right across from the Steve Silver Building, you know where that is. That's here in Baltimore, on the north side of Baltimore. You'll be at eye level with a rare bird, the yellow-crowned night heron. These birds are doing their thing right above Jones Falls Valley there in the heart of the city, mating, having babies. So photographer Dave Lichtenheim is joining us. He came in from Ellicott City to be with us in Studio A today because Dave's been taking pictures of these amazing birds and impressive photographs. Hello, Dave. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. So you have a whole folio of these photographs, just of this particular night heron, yellow-crowned night heron in Wyman Park?
Well, I have a portfolio of those, but other birds as well that I have photographed in the past.
Okay, but this yellow-crowned night heron, this is a rare bird. And how did you find out about it in being in Baltimore?
Well, I found out about it from fellow photographers, have a sort of a network of people. I also run this website, Conowingo Bald Eagles, on Facebook, and people contact me through that and tell me about other nesting birds.
Have you seen one of these before, a yellow-crowned
night heron? Coming here several years now. There are two types of similar birds. There's a black-crowned night heron and the yellow-crowned, and the yellow-crowned's more rare for this area, but especially right in the heart of Baltimore. It's very unique.
Rona, what do you know about this?
Well, I heard about it from Dave. We became friends through the Conowingo Birds page, but I had been hearing about the birds for a while just because running in Druid Hill Park and doing the Jones Falls Trail bike trip. And people sort of whisper about the birds. Oh, have you seen the birds? And sometimes they'll call them the golden-crested night herons or the you know, the just the herons or the birds, a lot of people stop and look at them for a few minutes and then they go about their jog. And so I was kind of curious about how did they arrive in this place in the city. And what I learned from the Baltimore Birding Club is that they have been in the area for a long, long time, but they used to nest at Stony Run. And in 2009 or 2010, I was told there was a storm and they lost their place in Stony Run, and they started coming to the Round Falls, where Dave has photographed them for quite some time. And now there are several nests several nesting pairs of birds. And it's a pretty special thing.
Now, Dave, you were up taking some more photographs today.
Yes.
Now, we can't see these yet because they're still in your camera, right? But no, it's okay. It's okay. What did you see today when you went there?
Well, there are approximately 11 birds amongst two trees. The majority of 10 of the birds are in one tree, and they like to nest over water high up. I guess it's
So the Jones Falls is down
right
there.
Right below it.
Right.
Nice area. Good view probably on their nest. Two of the nests have five eggs. The parents are sitting. They take turns sitting on the eggs.
So obviously you're at an advantage where you can actually see the eggs.
You can see from the bridge, or you can also shoot from below where the waterfall round falls is.
Right.
Dave, about how far away are the trees from the bridge, the viewing area?
Looking down?
Yeah, how far would you say it
20
is?
Feet.
Just 20 feet. Is that close?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, again, I think someone said, Rona, this is called the Cedar Avenue Bridge.
Oh, is it?
Someone said that on Facebook. I'm not sure that's what it's called, and I didn't have a chance to check. I just know this as the road where the Steve Silver Company is. It's really a bridge that goes into Druid Hill Park.
That's right? What I know it as. And I would like to sort of urge, if anyone from the Baltimore City Parks Department is listening, it would be great if this area were a little more accessible. It's sort of like a Baltimore, you have to know it to know it thing. There is a sign that says Jones Falls Trail, and then you walk down kind of a paved switchback and cross Falls Road, but there's no crosswalk, and there's no sign saying anything about the birds or anything of that sort. And then you sort of climb down this hill, and then you get to a really nice viewing platform that is named for James Rouse, which the city spent money on, clearly. But
I didn't know about that. So you're talking about down on Falls Road,
right? So you can
below this bridge.
You can either go up to the top of the bridge, and you can park. There's private parking, but there is a lot, I guess, you can use on the weekend.
Street parking.
Yeah, street parking, but not very much of it, I don't think. And then you can look at the top of the bridge. And then you can also go down, follow the path, and then across Falls Road right below the Baltimore Streetcar Museum.
Okay.
And there's a red bicycle there, but no sign or anything saying, you know, yellow-crowned night heron viewing area or any such
thing.
Well,
do we want that? I mean, we're talking about it on the radio, but Dave, obviously these birds don't care too much about the humans that are walking by on the bridge. They're kind of, well, aware but oblivious, or they don't care.
They're not disturbed. Don't appear to care at all. There's a lot of noise in the area.
Yeah.
The light rail goes right by there.
Yeah. It's nice. You know, it sort of mutes out all the waterfalls, sort of mutes out all the noise surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good location.
Okay. And I'm surprised at the number. You said there might be 11 adult birds?
Well, one gentleman has spotted about 18 birds total.
Wow.
And they fly up and down. They're not just located.
And are they all the yellow-crowned night
yes.
heron?
Yes.
Wow. And this is a big deal. Okay. Because I'm not, I had never seen one of these. I've seen the great blue heron in Baltimore City. I've seen
them. The great blue are substantially larger.
Okay.
The interesting part about watching these birds is they're right now is their mating displays. They're beautiful. They have beautiful plumage. They have they do like a handshaking. One will do a very interesting rendition of flashing its feathers at the other one, and then a couple seconds later, the other the other sex will flash back, and that's part of this ritual. And you can see all that. It's still going on even today.
And the result is five eggs in two separate nests.
They usually have like one egg a day or one egg every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And, two of them have five eggs each, and the third one has three. And there's at least 11 or 12 birds there. that haven't started making nests. They'll either use existing nests or they'll rebuild it. And watching them rebuild is really fun.
It's fun because the male will bring a stick back to the nest, and the female will sort of assess the stick and kind of decide whether it's good enough.
She's the interior designer.
That's very funny.
She moves the stick very particularly into different location.
This must be interesting to watch. Dave, you sound like you go there almost every day.
Not quite every day, but
a lot. But frequently.
In order to get good shots, you got to go back frequently.
Dave Lichtenheim was joining us. You also mentioned your Conowingo Bald Eagles Facebook page.
Yes.
I'll have to check that out today. I've been on the Stafford Road in Darlington in Harford County, and I've seen folks assemble in the same area every year on the side of the road, and they're looking across the road and up to a very high old tree. May even be partially dead, that tree.
It is.
And there's a big old eagle's nest in
there. It's been there 25 or 30 years, some number like that.
So I may have driven past you taking pictures
there.
It's
possible. But go to Conowingo. That's where the big number.
Tell folks about that. There's a fisherman's park at Conowingo Dam.
Yes.
You can park your car. You don't have to fish when you're there. You just get out, and there's a platform, a viewing platform.
You can view all along the parking lot, and all year round they're bald eagles. Around Thanksgiving time period, when the weather gets cold up north and the rivers freeze, the bald eagles fish on the surface. When they can't fish, they come down south. They know Conowingo is an exceptionally good area, lots of varieties of fish there. You can see in upwards of 200 to 300 bald eagles in one day.
It's a great comeback story, isn't it?
It's probably the best bald eagle viewing area in the east, on the East Coast.
Dave, how long have you been photographing birds?
I started about 5 years ago, right before I went to South Africa. I bought a big lens, didn't know what I was doing. Met another gentleman who's a birder for about 50 years, and that got me hooked.
A question from one of our listeners, Jerome. Please ask your guest, Dave, if the scarlet tanager is a rare bird in Maryland. I photographed one on Sunday and had never seen one before. I was in the Gunpowder Falls area. This is an extraordinary bird that I've seen one time in my life in an oak forest, on the edge of an oak forest. It makes a cardinal look like he's dressed in pink. The scarlet tanager, this red, incredible red color with black on its wings. Right, Dave?
I have never seen one.
Okay, so I saw one once.
It is a rare bird. It's a forest interior dwelling bird, and so it lives deep inside the forest. And as we've been losing a lot of our forests, so have we also lost this bird. So it is a rare bird in Maryland, and the only place that I know that has them is the Patuxent Research Refuge up in Laurel, which has like 10,000 acres of forest.
Okay. I saw one in the Pretty Boy Watershed, the Upper Co area of Baltimore County once, 10 years ago. I'd love to see one again. Do you photograph shorebirds or waterbirds or any kind of birds?
Anything that'll fly off.
Okay. What other things have you seen in Baltimore City? I'm curious about that. What other birds?
It's funny, you know, once you start learning about birds, you start seeing them more. I never even saw great blue herons. I must have been blind, but they're all over the place.
There's one, I think, if you come up Interstate 83 and you get off, it's either Cold Spring or Northern Parkway. I think it's Northern Parkway. There's usually one there every year in that big ditch that is the Jones Falls, and they're standing there waiting for something to swim along so it can have dinner. Do we know, in the case of this particular bird, a yellow-crowned night heron, I guess rarely seen in Baltimore City in an urban area like this, is it because, do we know why? Is there any suspicion as to why it would choose that place? A good food source nearby?
Well, they choose areas that are over waterways, but they're typically more southern in nature, in swampy areas.
I see.
They fish, you know, in areas that have shallow water, things like that. Once you start photographing animals, you realize more and more how they're intertwined with the environment. So if this waterway is dirty and polluted, that's where they fish. They get their crabs and other things. And that particular waterway, I don't know, looks pretty darn dirty all the time. You see plastic floating down there. We really need to clean up our act. And people like me don't need to see the birds there. People that are in the county and city need to go out there and see what trash is, because it's going to kill the birds eventually.
It's coming from upstream.
Yep.
It comes from Baltimore City, too, but it also comes upstream. Anyone who stood at the Inner Harbor and seen where the Jones Falls empties into the harbor after a big, flushy rainstorm can see that trash, can see all the plastic that floats down there. It gets pretty depressing. But
yeah, it does. Jones Falls is getting a water wheel, a trash wheel pretty soon. So hopefully that will help. I did want to say that these yellow-crowned night herons, you asked about their rarity. They are endangered in New Jersey. They are endangered in a couple other states. And the reason is they've lost a lot of their habitat, and their habitat is largely wetlands. So one reason that they like the Jones Falls is because it offers them water for fishing, but it also offers them safe harbor. Those nests are humans can look at them, but you really can't access them. They're above the falls, and they're, you know, as Dave said, about 20 feet from where a human being could stand. So they're pretty well protected. And I think that's why they've chosen it, because they've lost so much of their other habitat.
Okay. So if you go there on that bridge near Steve Silver, right, Dave? Just yeah. Look. Just look and admire, and then have a treat. While they're there, the yellow-crowned night heron, a rare sight in Baltimore City. Dave Lichtenheim, a photographer who lives in Ellicott City, joining us on the show today, and you can look for his folio of photographs on my Facebook page. Dave, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll take a little break here. We'll come back a little bit about frogs with Rona. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Francesca posted on Facebook that, yes, she's seen these yellow-crowned night herons frequently in the Lake Walker neighborhood in North Baltimore. First sighted maybe 5 years ago. Lovely, she says. It's Midday on the Bay, our monthly edition of Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. Carolyn in Towson, we'll start with you. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Carolyn?
Good. We have a home in Towson, but we also have a place we go up in Perryville on the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep lifeless at both homes. But we had an exciting event this year up at Perryville because one day we pulled into the house and realized we had 5 eagles in our tree right at the water's edge.
Wow. What a sight that must have been. Did you try to take a picture, or did they fly away immediately when they saw you?
No, they hung out there for quite a while. I got pictures, and they were mature and immature both. And they tend to nest around the corner, around the point, in an area where there are farms and no home.
So you got pretty close to them. Now, have they been back?
They haven't been back yet, but they would be probably around the site now. We would canoe around to see them. We haven't done it yet, but they'd be probably nesting at this point.
Carolyn, thanks for that call. Dave Lichtenheim is still in the studio with us. So I guess they're not the eagles aren't too concerned about humans being around either.
Well, some of them are pretty screamish.
Oh, yeah?
Around Conowingo area, I think they're used to more people, and they will land in the trees very close to people. So you can get a very clear shot,
yeah,
or just observe them. Usually they'll fly up with a fish and try to hide, so none of the other eagles. Usually there's 6 other eagles that will be chasing. They're a bunch of thieves.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I went to Blackwater Wildlife Refuge once, parked my car, stepped out, and within a second or two after I had stepped out of a car, an eagle came out of the sky somewhere, splashed in the water, and rose again with a fish in its talons. Like, thank you. Thank you very much. I didn't even have to put a quarter in the meter.
Right.
I mean, it was amazing. That was amazing. It was like on cue, like they were working for the tourists or something. It was amazing.
I saw an eagle once drop a fish, right, almost hit the fisherman, and I imagine the fisherman wasn't doing a good enough job, so the eagle decided to help out.
Yeah. I got one day, it was fishing in the Gunpowder River way up in Moncton and not having a good day, not catching anything, and an osprey went right overhead, carrying a brown trout in its talons right over my head, maybe 30, 40 feet up. Right. Yeah.
Taunting you.
Having a better day than I was. Yeah. Betty's in Northeast Baltimore giving us a ring on Midday. Hi, Betty.
Hello, Dan, and thank you for having this wonderful program.
But I wanted to let you know that in the city, in Herring Run Park, in the Hall Spring area, we have seen the great blue heron, the great egret, and the little green heron fishing in the stream at the little falls where the old sewer lines used to lay. And as you know, the water in Herring Run is not always at its best.
No.
No.
They are a sight to behold when you see them fishing. And also the comment about the scarlet tanager, we do see them regularly in Herring Run Park, but only for a very brief period. They must be nesting somewhere further north, but probably the end of April till mid-May.
And they come through.
Yes, the scarlet tanager.
Hey,
they are beautiful.
Thank you for that, Betty. Yeah, I got to keep my eye out for another one of those. You know what she was saying about Herring Run, though? Those birds, maybe they're desperate, but those birds would not be there if there wasn't a food source, right?
Right, and they do fish. And that's what Dave was concerned about is, what are they eating? Herring Run water quality is not good, as is the case in most of the city.
Chuck in Hamden, thank you for calling Midday.
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
You don't have to go stomping all over the woods of Maryland to see a lot of wildlife. Two nights ago, I saw a silver fox going up Hickory Avenue. in 1 year here, I lived behind 3838 Roland. We had a pair of peregrine falcons meet and mate on the top of 3838 Roland. And then later in the year, they brought their babies, two birds, back to 3838 because we always have a big sparrow population in the area because of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
They eat grass seed. And so they taught the babies to hunt there, and then they abandoned them there. At about the same time that was going on, we had a mating pair of kestrels stay in the area for about a week. I was really surprised to see that. I'd only seen one in my entire career outdoors.
Yeah, same here.
And then we had a gear falcon that was hanging around all summer. And this is, and that year the butterfly of the monarch migration picked my yard to come through.
What a lucky man.
So in an hour, you would see 150 to 200 monarch butterflies go streaming west.
What did you do,
Dan? My yard.
What did you do, Chuck? Did you put something out for them? Some honey, some grape jelly?
I have five 12-inch diameter bird baths that I refill every day.
And the butterflies like those?
Well, I also have a really nice herb garden, and some of the butterflies come in to feed during the summer.
They like that
I've
herb.
I've got a really amazing insect population out there.
Hey, I have a question for you. What happened to the peregrines? Have they been back?
No. We had a large group of subfamily group of crows move into the area.
Oh.
And the peregrines disappeared.
A murder of crows.
They're peregrines at Conowingo.
You see peregrines at Conowingo, too.
And they don't get along with the eagles. There's a friction.
How many kinds of birds have you seen up there? I mean, it's a long list, isn't it?
You name it, Baltimore Orioles. There's about 300 great blue heron nests across the river. And woodpeckers, pileated woodpeckers,
right.
You name it.
Right.
Actually, if you go even south of the dam to Susquehanna Park, a large variety of birds and wildlife. Very good area, mostly because of the Susquehanna River.
And lots of shorebirds, too.
His Nan in Chester, Maryland. Hello, Nan.
Hello, Dan. I wanted to tell you that in our backyard in Severna Park, we had a pair of scarlet tanagers that seemed to live there because we would see them so often. the male was had a beautiful coloring.
Oh, just, it's amazing.
The female had kind of a, I was just reading my Audubon bird book, and it says it's an olive green. I call it a yellow, and down on its breast is more yellow. And female.
Nan, excuse me, but how long ago was that that you saw the scarlet tanagers? Is this recent?
It was probably about 25 years ago.
Yeah. I'm in a 10-year tanager drought, so, folks, if you've never had a chance to see one, but you got to look, right? And you got to go to the right areas. You got to go to wooded areas,
right,
on the edges of forests like that. Rona had another story she wanted to share with us today. This one is not as happy a story as the yellow-crowned night heron. It has to do with a little frog and with a virus.
Yes, this is a virus called Ronavirus that they've just discovered in Maryland in 2001. And they really started to learn more about it in 2002 and 2003 when the Intercounty Connector was being built and the biologists for the state were moving all of these turtles to get them to a safe place. And they noticed that the turtles were sick. And they discovered this virus called the Ronavirus. Rana is Latin for frog. And this virus is transmitted through frogs, by frogs and through frogs, but it can also go to salamanders and turtles. And it's showing up in a lot of places in Maryland and in areas where the Ronavirus is in the water, up to 90% of the population of frogs will die from it.
And what happens? It gets into the water that they're in, or they absorb it through their skin?
Yeah, exactly. So it gets into the water that they're in, and the frogs absorb it through their skin. Other animals then will get it either through the water, from contact with frogs, or from eating the eggs that the frogs lay. And biologists are trying to discover more about this, because a lot of times by the time they get to an area where they believe the virus to be, the die-off has already occurred.
Oh, you mean it's fatal?
Yes. And so it kills the frogs within hours, tadpoles
where,
and
where
frogs.
Is this happening, Rona? You say Prince George's County?
Well, the first case was Prince George's, and then it was Montgomery. But all throughout Maryland, there are spots. Oregon Ridge has had some documented cases. Hereford County has had a documented case of a box turtle with it. So nature centers are on alert, and Maryland Department of Natural Resources has a study ongoing to try to determine where the virus is and to try to get ahead of it. There are some things you can do to prevent the virus. One thing you can do is just be careful about washing nets when you're – a lot of these nature centers have frog walks and tadpole walks where they go and they look at fish and they use a net and they pull out the tadpole and show the kids to make sure that those nets are washed, similar to the sort of things they do for that that algae that was all over the gunpowder not long ago that's called rock snot. I forget what the technical
Didymo.
Term. Didymo, yeah. So, you know, sort of the same kinds of provisions, washing your equipment, washing your feet if you're in the water.
And they think this can prevent the spread of the infection?
Yes, you know, just to keep things clean, and also to, if you know that you have infected animals, to try to keep them away from other animals, which is difficult to do because the signs of the virus are so swift to kill.
I was in Deer Creek last week fishing for shad, and over on the edge of Deer Creek, saw the most amazing sight of toads multiplying, toads trying to multiply and laying the eggs. It was amazing sight, a cluster of eggs like I've never seen before, and must have been 40 or 50 toads. I guess they're the spring peepers, right?
Yeah.
They weren't peeping. They were doing something else. And anyway, so I went back to fishing, but it was a pretty amazing scene from nature. Karen writes by email, going back to our subject of the yellow-crowned night herons, Rona, my husband and I have been watching and photographing these in the past 3 years. The past 3 weeks. There was a nesting pair in our neighborhood in 2008 in the Lake Walker Annesley neighborhood. They got the Maryland Ornithological Society out to document the pair with three offspring. They would walk on my neighbor's above-ground pool's cover below the tree where they were nesting. And Karen sent some photographs for us to see. Thank you, Karen. Maybe we can post those on our Facebook page, along with the photographs of Dave Lichtenheim. You can find them on my Facebook page. And Dave, again, thank you for being here today and sharing that with us. And if you got pictures of the eggs, maybe we can get those up there. Oh, they'll be in your folio later on.
Tonight.
Okay, great. And Rona, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. We produce this show once a month, Midday on the Bay, in collaboration with Rona and the Bay Journal. You can get a free subscription of the Bay Journal at ChesapeakeBayJournal.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're on Facebook as well. And
it's still free?
It's still free. Please subscribe.
Very good.
Like us on Facebook.
Thank you, Rona. Thank you again. See you, folks.